Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. Welcome to the second talk of the semester in the Communication Research Colloquium Series. Today we have the lovely Dr. Charlotte Powell joining us. Charlotte joined us this past year after completing her doctoral studies down ways of Texas in Austin. She's here as a professor of Media Studies and Television Studies here within the College of Communication. Today, in her talk, she's going to be taking us back in time to, I was going to say the 1900s, the 1990s, and the early 2000s to talk about taste cultures of the period and how those interacted with the discourse of religion within the television industry. So if you would, please give a warm welcome to Dr.
Thank y'all very much for coming. I appreciate it. In the 21st century, some of you may have noticed, there's been rather a boom in terms of television that deals with religion one way or another. Religious narratives showing up, Preacher on AMC, shows like Supernatural continuing on for many years. A number of shows, surprisingly, that use the biblical book of Revelation as a structuring idea for their series. And yet, in some other research of mine, when I talked to writers particularly who worked on those types of shows, they would be very quick to say, oh no, our show's not religious. The use of the Bible, it's not the Bible, it's mythology. Or mythology was a real kind of favorite of theirs, but like, no, our show's not religious. That storyline is not religious. And so this is this kind of strange paradox going on TV now, the simultaneous boom in programming that deals with this subject and a subsequent disavowal by creative industry workers working on these shows. They don't want to be associated with religious TV. And so this is my attempt to figure out what that means and why. And it traces back to the last moment of kind of mass popular, broad appeal of these religious shows, in particular, a middle-brow approach to representing religion, read white Christianity, on television. So before we get there, we have to do a little bit of the history of religious television in America, in particular on broadcasting, which will be the focus today, right? Religion has always been a subject that has been broached by scripted television in America, starting even kind of before the classic network system got going. Shows like The Goldbergs featured Jewish family doing kind of Jewish things. But once ABC, NBC, and CBS really established their oligopolistic power in the mid-1950s going forward, religion became a little bit blander, a little bit whiter, a little bit more normative, and used rather sparingly. The couple of examples, of course, famously Sally Field and The Flying Nun, shows like The Flying Nun, the Thornbirds miniseries in the 1970s. These shows approached religion, used narrative tropes, elements of religion, but weren't, aside from the Thornbirds as a very kind of limited risk miniseries, tried to not alienate the mass audience that they relied on and that their advertisers relied on, and more importantly, that their local affiliate stations relied on, because they would be the ones who would get the heat were something controversial to appear on the screen. And so religion kind of appears here and there throughout the classic network era until the 1980s, when we get the precursor to Touched by an Angel, Highway to Heaven, a series about a do-gooder angel with a vaguely Christian kind of flavor, played by Michael Landon, of course, traveling the country and doing good, as angels are wont to do, right? And that really kind of set the scene. And in the 1980s, it coincided with the rise of and within the popular culture as well as within the political culture of the so-called moral majority. The rise of televangelists like Pat Robertson, like Jerry Falwell, as significant influencers within kind of the larger culture. And so Highway to Heaven coincides with this kind of movement towards Christianity being a larger part of the cultural conversations beyond the pulpit. It is set up to appeal to that kind of middle American white Christian audience that might be a part of the so-called moral majority, while also not alienating kind of anybody else or dealing with religion too in depth to potentially kind of step on anybody's, any believer's toes. But in the late 1980s and early 1990s, big shifts are happening in terms of the television industry. This is an era that is called by scholars like, well, Michael Curtin coined the term, the neo-network era. And in the neo-network era, it is called this because it is meant to imply both kind of the ongoing presence of the networks that had established themselves from the 1950s to the 1980s as being the dominant industry stakeholders. But it's also an era in which there's a great deal of shifting as to what broadcast means and who it's appealing to and how it's making money. Because this is the age of the rise of cable, right? For one hand, it's also an era of new networks. You see some examples of the first of those new networks, Fox, over on the screen. And so, as Michael Curtin identifies as indicative of and characteristic of this era, there's a bifurcation of audience appeal going on. There's starting to be two different streams of audience targeting in the television industry. One is continuing along the path that has been successful for the previous three decades, broad appeal, seeking programming that will not alienate any particular part of the audience, appeals to the broadest possible audience, both in terms of taste and number. This is, you know, continuing on with eyeballs first, other demographics second in terms of rating style. But the neo element of the neo network is the starting to target more upscale audiences that are associated with certain kind of affluent, coastal, elite taste cultures. And in order to appeal to these groups, more and more television shows, especially on young fledgling networks like Fox that have much more to gain and less to lose, and also on new cable channels and later hours on some of the established networks, there's this rise of programming that is more cinematic or more serialized, more diverse, edgier in particular. Willing to tackle controversial issues, willing to display more sex, more violence, more adult language in order to try to appeal to those audience niches that are thought to be oppositional to the kind of mass blandness, the middle brow taste that was associated with mass broadcasting at the time, right? And middle brow meaning this somewhere between high brow and not quite low brow, right? This isn't trashy TV. This is the vast middle that it can appeal to as many people, but part of that broad appeal is you lose some distinction. You lose some for creatives, you lose some creative distinction. For marketers, you lose the ability to kind of specifically target groups. And so those are kind of the two paths that are going forward. an edge versus mass. Now, Fox comes in, starts really targeting kind of the edgy market. They have shows that are skewing younger, skewing more urban, much more diverse, start targeting the young African-American male urban audience, eventually getting more and more white, bringing in Aaron Spelling to do Beverly Hills 90210, and skewing a little bit more female, a little bit more white, a little bit more affluent. And that's a pattern that comes again and again, right? Starting with edge and then translating it to a slightly more mass approach on broadcast. Another kind of new network on the spot, smaller than Fox, a netlet, if you will, the first of two that come about in 1995, the WB. And the WB employs the same kind of targeting and same target audience that Fox had when it first landed on the scene. And you can see that in this affiliate promo from 1995. But they are also going to seek kind of a slightly less broad but still family appeal with Seventh Heaven in the next year.
This the Flock, baby.
This is the WB.
Hold on. I was told that HDMI would do sound. Right, you guys can't hear that.
And the front row, I certainly can.
Okay.
Because
I can switch to VGA. Because I've got more things with sound. It's fairly important you can understand what's being told. Yeah, I don't know why it wasn't. But I've got my trusty VGA adapter. Technical difficulty. Sorry about this. So that's gives you a little flavor, a little taste of how the WB was presenting itself to affiliates to try and get them to sign up in 1995. You notice a number of Wayans Brothers and Parenthood, black-oriented sitcoms, which is the same strategy used by Fox when it started. They also have a basically a Married with Children knockoff to indicate the model they're using and what kind of audience they're trying to attract. Young, urban, hip to a certain degree. However, at their first upfronts as a network, they described that they were, WB executives told the room of advertisers that they were taking, quote, dead aim at the kids, teens, and young adults ABC had left behind with the dismantling of its TJIF Friday comedy lineup in the mid-1990s. So the WB, not only are they echoing in those first years somewhat Fox's strategy, they're also picking up the niches left behind as the broadcast networks are starting to fill their schedules with slightly more options of the edgy content, or moving away from the family audience that they had previously targeted. And as part of that strategy, in their second year, the WB turned to Aaron Spelling, who worked so well bringing Beverly Hills 90210 to Fox and really kind of making that network one of the bigger draws for advertisers in the early 1990s. And he was brought in to the WB to try and create a, quote, light family drama that executives believes were not like anything else on the air. They are cannibalizing the niches that have been left in terms of programming by the major networks. As a smaller netlet, this is what they have to do. They have to try and figure out a strategy that separates them from the larger broadcasting powers. And the show, of course, that Aaron Spelling would develop was Seventh Heaven, and when it would go on to be the WB Network's number one show for most of its run, which is also most of the life of the short-lived WB Network before it merged with UPN to become the CW in 2007. So as the network netlets further developed their programming, they would continue to narrow both their genre offerings and their target audiences, meaning that the narrative and stylistic features of middlebrow fare like Seventh Heaven would eventually become outliers to the WB brand, right? Despite it being so successful, and in fact, in part because it was so successful. And this is true of both Seventh Heaven and Touched by an Angel. Their success in this mid to late 90s period as middle brow fare, right? Part of their appeal was the fact that they could appeal, that they could reach and target kind of this broad middle brow, middle American audience, led to them being the exemplars of what was undesirable in the 2000s and beyond, as networks and cable outlets and all the new various outlets that would create our current era of peak TV sought more and more to target upscale audiences that were seen as antithetical and oppositional to middle brow tastes. All right. So, Touched by an Angel, right? Setting up this middle brow taste and its association with religious television on what was the most successful broadcast network at the time, in terms of numbers and especially in terms of appeal to that mass middle brow audience. In the mid-late to 1990s, Touched by an Angel presented a mode of storytelling that was unusual for network broadcast television, a drama with a religious agenda. The show's executive producer, Martha Williamson, and star, Roma Downey, were both Christians and were open with the press from the time of the show's inception about how their religion shaped the content of the show. Katherine Johnson, in her study of Heartland TV, talks about CBS's appeal at this time. CBS, along with PAX TV, which I'll talk about in a little bit, their institutional identities were premised on the profitability of three concepts: home, the nuclear family, and belief in God. these are the three characteristics that most appealed to the so-called heartland TV audience. The associated middle brow, middle American, white Christian, upper working class, lower middle class, in what today's parlance might be called the real Americans, or the true Americans, or Trump's America, right? This is very much the same kind of taste culture. The belief in God that was part of this appeal is contextualized within American Christian norms assumed about the mass audience that enjoyed Touched by an Angel. The show features a trio of helpful angels, as one hopes that all angels are, moving through American society and helping those who need it. They are benign and largely unencumbered by obvious evangelism, but they are still angels, and they are very clearly situated within a Christian context. So to help us better understand kind of how Touched by an Angel was articulating both Williamson's and Downey's Christianity, as well as its appeal to that kind of God-flavored middle America, the entire first episode is on YouTube, and so we are going to watch a couple of clips to help illustrate. In the first clip, we'll see the angels being introduced, Monica being played by Roma Downey, and Tess played by Della Reese. And one thing to note as it goes through, the ways in which these angels are presented as supernatural right off the bat. And yet the show is never really characterized as a fantastic genre show. The dove, by the way, is a symbol of the Holy Ghost in the Christian Trinity.
Sooner or later, you're going to meet a little boy named David. Now, stay close to him.
And what do I do?
What did I just say? You stay close to him. He's carrying a lot of trouble. Why you got that look on your face? You just been promoted, baby.
I just thought casework would be more than babysitting.
Oh, you'll be surprised. There always seems to be more to it. People are complicated things.
I know. That's what I love about them. How do they do it, Tess? They get up every morning and start all over again. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And they don't even know what we know.
God help them. Here it comes. Now, you've never taken human form for more.
Okay. So you can see that these exchanges, this introduction to the angels, is done with sincerity. right? There's no winking, there's no tongue-in-cheek distancing. This opening scene sets the tone for the show that it continues throughout. Joyful, grateful, optimistic, and Christian. Now, as the show progresses, it is an episodic series. I actually don't have time for a further clip. But in this episode, it really kind of emphasizes the ways in which these angels are coded, not so subtly, as Christian. There is a later scene where, I can just pull up the still. She reveals she's an angel to a heartsick woman. And the light saturates her from behind, creating a very kind of iconographically Christian angel halo. And it goes on to, she's telling this woman that she's an angel. The woman is heartsick over the loss of her youngest child in the crib, and talks about there's an angel with your child now, there was an angel with your child that night, trying to provide comfort for this broken mother. And eventually the mother leaves and Monica gets down on her knees and prays for help. Looks up at the sky, which again is kind of bright and oversaturated, and prays for heavenly help, right? So these are just some of the ways in which the kind of Christianity is overt, but still kind of vague, right? They are not saying God, they're not praying to Jesus, they are praying to God or to you, capital Y, up in the sky, right? And so faith, particularly of that traditional Christianity, is the moral narrative and emotional guiding force for the series, made evident and overt in the first episode. The sincere, unambiguous central appeals to God and God's work through the angels doesn't shy away from, and in fact embraces, Christian moral lessons, such as forgiveness, love, repentance, and often the ideal of a unified nuclear family that's really associated with the tying of Christianity and conservative politics that the moral majority put forth starting in the 1980s. Although Touched by an Angel appealed to religious audiences, it was not explicitly targeted towards them. It was targeted to a much broader CBS audience that was assumed was mostly white Christian Protestant. And if they weren't, they were part of the mass audience that would not necessarily feel alienated from that dominant narrative, because it is the hegemonic religion of kind of the majority of Americans. And so Touched by an Angel is very popular on CBS to the point that it was the centerpiece in CBS's 1996 Welcome Home rebranding, which you can see a couple of seconds.
Address is CBS.
Welcome home.
Right? Bringing in that sense of home, the nuclear family, and belief in God that was part of its branding at the time. It followed a Sunday night family night at the movies that featured such TV movies as Tuesdays with Maury. More of that Christian-flavored moralizing that would come to be associated as, like, that is the epitome, that is the paragon of preachy TV. Bland moralizing with a Christian bent, with a Christian meaning. And it would continue to be associated with this kind of, these, the God flavor, those three ideas of home, the nuclear family, and belief in God, when in 1998, PAX TV, which was an over-the-air, even much smaller netlet that the WB and UPN launched, and it used selected syndicated series as its anchor in programming and branding, and Touched by an Angel was the jewel in the crown of its group. It Other shows included CBS's Diagnosis Murder, which starred Dick Van Dyke as a murder mystery-solving doctor. But Touched by an Angel was the key to its brand. And so even in second-run syndication, and in fact being used as the centerpiece of PAX TV, more explicit religious audience targeting and branding really became ossified as part of what would be considered preachy TV. And in particular, that the association of preachiness with middle-brow tastes, the heartland audience to which PAX was targeting. A similar story would unfold, though, with a very different origin on the WB with Seventh Heaven. Premiering 2 years after Touched by an Angel premiered on CBS, Seventh Heaven was the family drama that was created by Brenda Hampton, who had previously worked on Mad About You, and Aaron Spelling of Dynasty and Beverly Hills 90210 fame. The story revolved around the Camden family, Reverend Camden, his wife, and their five children. Later on, they would have seven. It was a really rather prolific family. And it would become the most successful show on the network for most of its run, although it rarely broke the upper one, the kind of low 100s in Nielsen ratings. It averaged around 115, I think, for the year. It was family-oriented, but it wasn't as overtly Christian at the beginning. There was no supernatural introduction in the first moments like we got with Touched by an Angel. Instead, there was a little more hedging its bets. The first episode, the pilot, starts off for most of its run, for most of its runtime, about half an hour, just setting up the interpersonal drama among the teenage children who aligned with much of the target audience of the WB, as they wanted to get kind of the youth audience, the young adult white audience that had made Fox so successful. And then about halfway into the show, it is revealed and is positioned as a reveal that the father is actually a man of the cloth. It's the camera starts at his shoes and pans up to his pastoral robes and shows him in a church. It is this kind of twist in the middle of the pilot episode. And throughout much of its run, Seventh Heaven would rely on more emphasis on the family and teen drama and not as kind of clearly structured by religious narratives. However, many of the episodes, especially the ones that dealt with more controversial subjects such as addiction, teen pregnancy, all of the favorite teen very special episode topics that the WB like to employ. The moral learned at the end of the episode, usually by the teenagers of the Camden family, would be framed in a Christian context. Oftentimes it would line up with a specific homily that Reverend Camden would deliver in church, with many scenes of his family sitting in the front row and really hearing the message. And so it would come back again and again to the Christian element as, if not the structuring idea of the show, like with Touched by an Angel, certainly the backbone of it, and in particular with regards to its moralizing and its moral lessons learned. Which is how it got this reputation of being uncool. Anytime you learn lessons, especially from the parental figures on a TV show aimed at teens, it's going to be cast as uncool. And that was exactly what Seventh Heaven did. But its origin, they were really trying to avoid that. So in an interview with Jordan Levin, who was a WB executive at the network's launch, and was instrumental in the development of this show in particular. He grew up in Texas. He knew the Heartland audience was kind of untapped, especially with regards to the lived experience of Christianity being just part of the culture and not necessarily something to focus on. And so he worked with Jamie Kellner, who at the time was the president was the CEO of the WB, to develop this family show, right, to fill in the gap left by ABC's losing of the TGIF block. And so this is how he described the development of the show, and in particular, how the religious aspect came into it. He and Jamie Kellner and a couple of other executives at the WB pitched the idea of a father being a pastor to producers Brenda Hampton and Aaron Spelling, not knowing what they'd think. We said, we don't want this to be a preachy show with a religious agenda. He didn't say, like, Touched by an Angel, but that would have been the main touchstone of that kind of approach. We just think it's an interesting juxtaposition to have this dad struggling with just being a father while also being viewed as someone who, in people's eyes, is supposed to be held to a higher standing. We didn't know how they would react. Brenda said, well, can I write the character in a way that I really want to? Do you want this character to be very upright and upstanding? Is this religious motivation or is this purely dramatic? To which they responded, it's purely dramatic. Now, why I put this whole quote up on the screen and then read it aloud, because it's a microcosm of a lot of the anxieties that were already fomenting about religious TV and preachy TV. You can see both the anxiety about presenting the mere idea to the producers as creative peers to them, indicating the real anxiety and potential risk felt about merely broaching the topic of developing a religious TV show within that environment in the mid-1990s. You can also see a little bit how Brenda Hampton's response reflects the creative anxiety and creative associations with religious TV as something opposite of dramatic, that if you are going to do a religious series that is religious in the way that Touched by an Angel was, more preachy, more moralizing, then that's going to limit your ability to tell dramatic stories, because you're going to be beholden to the kind of upstanding, upright models of humanity that the pastor might have to be, right? And so this is all going on even 2 years after Touched by an Angel, this sense that they did not want to be preachy, right? Literally said, we don't want this to be a preachy show. And you can get a sense of what they meant by preachy from some of that description and reaction. So, Seventh Heaven continues on in this vein. It was created with the idea of Reverend Camden being a pastor as an interesting hook, right, as something different and unique than what would be on TV, but well aware of the bind that could put them in as being categorized as a preachy show. And it proved very successful for the WB. Now, the WB at the time had much lower standards for what a success meant in the ratings because it didn't reach the same number of affiliates and therefore number of households that even Fox did at the time. It was always vying for market affiliation with UPN in many outlets. And so success is rather changed, constrained in terms of its definition for the WB. But its ratings did well. Its ad sales did well. However, by about 2000, the brand of the WB was changing significantly. While family programs still continued to be a centerpiece of its programming and its general brand, more and more these were skewing younger. They were trying to attract a young, hip audience. And this would kind of marginalize a lot of the older adult storylines featured on Seventh Heaven. The Reverend Camden and Annie, his wife, kind of moved more and more to the side, and the teenage storylines became more and more dominant, but it was still constrained within this preachy thing. And so many reviews at the time, or even reports of how well it was doing on the series, were couched in the discourse of, it's the uncool show at the WB. It is the kind of sad person at the party. And I use that metaphor with regards to, this is another promo from the WB to show you just how much the brand of the Netlit has changed. It had changed in the 5 years. So this is the Night is Young affiliate promo. And the only characters from Seventh Heaven who show up are the two youngest children, who by this time were 15 and 17 thereabouts within the diegesis of the show. The hippest club is full of WB stars. I'm waiting to point out Simon. The shows most prominently featured are Buffy, Charmed, Roswell. And you can see, like, the popular girls, the Dawson's Creek stars, have showed up multiple times. I think Simon's jumping there. There we go. So you can get a sense of how marginal the show had become despite its popularity to the brand, because the brand of the WB was aiming more and more to target its upscale young audiences. And that is kind of the perennial, that would continue on as the 2000s went forward. So moving from the early 2000s onward, when we leave the neo-network era behind and we move into what Amanda Lotz calls the post-network era, is an era in which broadcasting, such as it was, is kind of losing its favor. Niches are increasingly important. You can see Morgan Stanley Research, published in Business Insider, provides this great chart that the live ratings just downward and downward and downward. And part of this is because of the rise of DVDs and DVRs, as well as the growth of various new outlets, rise in prominence of cable outlets for original programming. More and more choices lead to much less of the pie for particularly broadcast networks. And yet, ad revenue stays fairly stable. And this is because increasingly, right, ad revenue is maintained through higher prices that are tied to targeting upscale niches. Right, and upscale audiences are understood to be oppositional to middle brow tastes. They are, by definition, people for whom television, such as it was not good enough. Right, these are the, it's not TV, it's HBO or AMC or what have you, distancing from the general idea of television as a mass medium. And it's just picked up in the last couple of years. We are currently in an era called peak TV, coined by FX president John Landgraf, in which there's an extraordinary number of scripted series over an increasing number of outlets that leads to increasing taste and affinity-based targeting of smaller and smaller audience share. This is a graph of the number of scripted series from 2002 onward. You can see this outrageous growth, relatively stable for broadcasting, but increasing massively for basic cable, relative stability, but still an increase in pay cable, and online services in these last 2 years is where it's really taken off, right? And so if you are focusing more and more on niches, even with broadcast, then that kind of association with the mass taste, middle brow taste, blandness is not going to get you enough viewers. And ad revenue or downstream revenue streams in order to make a show like Seventh Heaven or like Touched by an Angel viable. So instead we have variety of shows in this era that use religion but refuse to be called religious. They are mythological or spiritual or supernatural. The images up here are from Sleepy Hollow, which started on Fox in 2013, Lost, in a promotional still mirroring The Last Supper, and yet Damon Lindelof was like, our show wasn't religious, it was maybe spiritual. Man. Supernatural, the Angel Castiel that has been running on the WB and starting in 2005 and the CW ever since, that has had angels, demons, Lucifer, and God all as main characters cycling through, and yet, no, we're not religious, that's mythology. And even more recently, Rectify on Sundance, that Sundance executives talked about, maybe it's religious, but it's Southern religion. It is true for the South. It is not like religious, as a mode of distancing from the idea of religious TV as preachy that Touched by an Angel and Seventh Heaven established in the 1990s. Thank you. Questions? Yeah.
It's great. I gotta watch Supernatural more closely. My daughters are obsessed with it. But I don't think they think of it as anything but mythological.
Yeah.
My question is actually about Friday Night Lights. I'm hearing discussion of Friday Night Lights. I'm curious how you place Friday Night Lights into it, because it seems to appeal to that upper taste culture and yet definitely draw from a very Southern kind of somewhat middle brow kind of milieu. You know, obviously
right.
Because of the origins of the story.
Indeed. And it was, so Friday Night Lights, in my larger project, I talk about in conversation with Rectify, as both use a structure of Southern authenticity as a way of framing the use of religion that distances the anxiety that they would have as it being a religious show. It's not a religious show, it's a show that's about the South, and of course the South is going to feature white Christianity because it's this other culture to which that is a key signifier. But Friday Night Lights is interesting because it was framed originally and marketed to the Heartland audience when it was started. Ads during the Monday Night Football on NBC really tried to play up the football thing, but that first season did not get the mass audience, instead got the kind of upscale quality audience and struggled throughout because of that, right? Because it was not what NBC wanted for the show. They were trying to target the middle brow audience, but instead it was within the dramatic pack. I mean, Friday Night Lights is not preachy in the same way. It is occasionally moralizing in a Christian sense, but it doesn't revolve around that kind of morality in the same way that Touched by an Angel does. It doesn't didactically deliver it to the audience that Touched by an Angel in Seventh Heaven did. And that, along with its various kind of more realistic mise-en-scene, single camera operation, these various kind of quote-unquote cinematic flares to the look, separate it from kind of the middle brow-ness of those earlier series that were episodic, that were soundstage standard aesthetics, not trying to kind of do something different with the television form. Whereas Friday Night Lights, part of its appeal to the upscale audience was that it looked like nothing else on TV, or at least broadcast at the time. Is that...
Yeah, it's great, because I think it's a great example of those tensions.
Oh, absolutely. And it's fascinating, you know, I talked to an executive producer on there, and he too was like, our show wasn't really religious. I mean, the people, the characters were religious, but right. We always talked about it as being spiritual. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Joan of Arcadia.
Yes.
But I sort of feel like that was representing of God, but it was very anti-religion in the sense of there was no... The message was sort of like, well, there's no one right religion in the whole factor. So do you see that as sort of a reverse of it? Or
yeah, I think that Joan of Arcadia is a really interesting liminal case in that it is on CBS at the tail, like it starts the same year that Touched by an Angel ends. And in many ways, it's trying to appeal to a similar audience. And yet, it is... there's much more potential for kind of a subversive, as you said, approach to religion in that now God is speaking directly to a teenage girl and focusing on all the various kind of more liberal problems that kind of the teenage girl is facing in her day-to-day life, and the potential of a female prophet is always somewhat controversial. And so it's didn't quite have the same appeal, as well as the marketing for that show was very kind of divergent. Sometimes it talked about it as like Joan of Arc, Joan of Arcadia, very religious, and sometimes it was more like, this is like, you know, Quirky Wonderfalls on Fox as well, which was airing in the same season and often talked about together within the trade press and industry discourse. Yeah.
So I find it really interesting that if a middle brow audience is aiming for like the white America, that Touched by an Angel would have an African American angel. Mm-hmm. So is that just for trying to also get that African American audience that's highly religious?
Potentially. I mean, the casting of Della Reese is interesting, and certainly in those first few moments, her singing has this evocation of kind of spirituals. To a certain degree, that gratitude. That's a really great question, and it's not, like, the diversity is not emphasized anywhere in its marketing. And so the actual attempt to appeal to a diverse audience is a little up in the air. Whether they meant to or not, I would have to go back and talk to them.
I also wonder to your question whether the representation of the African American character was very normative of what Caucasian Americans would prefer to see as a large African American woman who's very motherly, older, versus a tall African American man who's young.
Exactly. And eventually on Touched by an Angel, a third angel is introduced and he's a white man. Other questions? Oh, yes, Kings. I love talking about the amazing failure that was Kings.
Yeah.
So Kings, if you don't know, you're fine doing that. It was an extraordinarily expensive serial drama on NBC that aired in 2009. Its absolute failure basically led to the firing of the president at the time, Greenblatt, I think. And it has been the albatross around his neck ever since. It was this massive, epic, alternate history Bible adaptation of the book of the story of David and Goliath and Saul, starring Ian McShane as Saul, in an alternate history that was kind of now and kind of feudal. Goliath in the story was a tank that was faced down by the character of David. And it was trying to be an HBO show on NBC in 2009, trying for that edgy audience. And yet they were like, okay, so we want like our own version of Lost meets Deadwood meets, you know, every other positive serial kind of quality show at the time. But I don't know how religious audience will react to that use of the Book of Saul. So they extraordinarily downplayed the fact that it was a biblical adaptation, that it was dealing at all with a biblical story. In fact, they downplayed every aspect of what the show was in its marketing. Its main marketing was an orange flag with an abstract image of a butterfly and just said Kings. And those were the billboards and the ads and all of these things. And so that's why nobody tuned in part. And it cost over a million per episode. It was crazy expensive, especially for NBC in 2009, which was not doing so well. And so this was their big like gamble to try and change their audience makeup, and it just utterly failed to the point that it sank the network executive. And so that was trying to bring that edgy approach to a story that you could not avoid the religious connotations. And so it failed in terms of its potential appeal to any kind of middle-brow Christian audience, and also failed in any attempt at an upscale audience that is kind of seen as a-religious, because it was just a mess. And it wasn't marketed as anything interesting enough to get their attention. Other questions? I love talking about Kings. It's so bonkers. Right? And so another thing about Kings that's really interesting, within the kind of rise in quantity of religious programming that we've seen since about 2003, I start with the miniseries of Battlestar Galactica as a real kind of first turning point of the rise of this stuff, and then we get Lost and Supernatural and a miniseries of Revelations and all these various things. It continues on, kind of steady trickle, Joan of Arcadia, Wonder Falls, until 2009 and Kings. And then basically nothing that wasn't already on the air until 2011. So it basically kills anybody's willingness to risk for religious narratives until enough time has passed that Hollywood has forgotten, which is about 2 years. Any, yeah?
Are there any current shows that you would classify as being preachy TV or neo-preachy or post-preachy?
So, I haven't yet had a chance to watch Greenleaf on OWN, but my sense of that is that it is more kind of soap operatic in its approach to, it's a story about a black megachurch with Oprah Winfrey. I think it started season 2 this week or next week. But it's very kind of, it's got all these primetime soap opera melodrama ticks that I think make it a little bit separate from that, as well as the fact that it's on a kind of black targeted network aimed at with a black cast and a black audience, which naturally kind of separates it out from the middle brow articulation of preachy, which is always coded as white, because that's the kind of large conception of what that audience is, what the middle American audience is. And I will say one aspect that kind of brings it back to the race thing, and I mentioned this briefly in my speech or in my earlier presentation, but PAX started in 1998 and CBS's rebranding as Welcome Home in 1996 were part of a larger trend and cultural discourse that the middle brow, middle American, heartland audience was being abandoned largely by every other outlet, right? NBC had its must-see TV sitcom block in the 1990s, and it's more kind of upscale quality dramas like ER. ABC was starting to kind of, leave behind the TGIF family block. And so this is in many ways kind of one very clear articulation of a moment in the 1990s that discourse of the middle brow, middle American white audience being left behind in favor of emphasizing programming that appeals to coastal elites, right? And so we can see a lot, this is part of the start of the long arm of the trend that we saw really kind of culminate in the election last year. And that discourse of feeling as if they're left behind started very clearly in the mid-1990s.
Think that now that the quote silent majority is, you know, sort of rising up and they feel like they're being heard, do you think that that could relaunch, you know, sort of a preaching to maybe not as big a wave as before, but
well, we're in a different context now because it's already there. It's been going on kind of simultaneously on niche cable networks like Up and the Hallmark Channel that do appeal to these and still run the same kinds of reruns that PAX TV use. And PAX TV is also an ION, which has translated to Ileron, and it still does the same thing. And so that's been going on, but as our choices increased, they're also allowed to be these kind of niche-oriented for that audience. But we are already seeing the ABC president has announced that they're looking for more TV shows coming down the pipeline that will appeal to the Trump's America. More working class sitcoms, more shows like Last Man Standing. They're already signaling that. Whether any of that will become associated with Christianity, yet to be seen.
Any other questions? All right, well, thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Nicely done.